Are you ready? Let's do it then.
G'day world, it's the 1st of January 2007, the first G'day world for 2007. Welcome my co-host for this week, Duncan, no relation, Riley.
G'day world, g'day Cam.
How you doing, mate? Ex-Blog Herald, ex-B5 Media, what else are you ex?
Oh, ex-employed at the moment, always looking for new ventures, but to starting a new year with some new ideas, and, you know, as they say, the world's the oyster, you can only go forward, so, you know, I can drop as many cliches as you'd like, really, but, yeah, look, I'm unemployed, I'm at home, and I'm talking to you on Skype.
Excellent. Well, we're pleased to have you, mate. I've been dying to get you on the show for a very long time. And, in fact, you and I did a podcast. The only podcast I think you've ever been on with us was... way back in, I don't know, just after Mick and I started G'day World, I think, you did an interview with us for the Blog Herald.
I did. One of the only two podcasts I ever did then, and that was what, 2.5-3 years ago when you started TPN, maybe?
Yeah, it would have been a bit over 2 years ago, I think, yeah.
Yeah.
So there you go. So we appreciated the coverage at the time. Thank you very much.
Not a problem.
Now, to kick off the first show of the year, we're going to jump into the Microsoft giving away laptop scandal that's hit the blogosphere over the last few days by calling in one of the Aussies who got one, Mitch Denny. Now, just bear with me, mate. I've got to try and do a Skype out call because Mitch is on a shitty ISDN line. I tried calling him earlier and it was pathetic. And it's not like you and I haven't had our own fair share of technical challenges tonight. Oh, can you hear that?
Yeah, no, I did hear that.
You can hear something. All right, this is me dialing in Mick's number, so just hang in there, man. If this cuts you out, I'll call you back in.
No worries.
Do I want to put my current call with Duncan Riley on hold? Yes.
Hello, Mitchell.
G'day, Mitch. Danny, how are you?
Good, thanks, mate. Yourself?
I'm very good, thanks, mate. Say g'day to Duncan Riley.
Hi, Duncan. How are you?
Good, thanks, mate. Yourself?
Pretty good, pretty good.
Mitch, you got yourself a freebie laptop courtesy of Microsoft, and was it AMD in the deal as well?
Yeah, from what we understand. Yeah, it was a... The AMD organised the hardware, I believe, and Microsoft organised the software.
And what did Acer have to do with it? Anything?
Well, I guess Acer was the vendor that AMD chose to provide the kit. So they're all, most of the machines are Acer Ferrari laptops, either 1000s or 5000s. There's also a few media centres kicking around as well, but I'm not sure if they're necessarily part of the same thing.
So from my understanding of reading the blogosphere over the last few days, this is part of Microsoft's attempt to get some blogosphere coverage of Vista. They've sent out some fully specced up Acer Ferrari laptops with AMD chips running Vista. It's nice clean builds. And they sent it out to how many bloggers around the world? Have you got any idea?
To be honest, I'm not really sure. I keep on hearing about new people every day. So I would not be surprised if it sort of approached between 50 and 100. So there's possibly a lot of people out there that haven't necessarily disclosed that they've received a laptop.
Did you get any prior warning? Did you know it was coming, or did it just turn up on the doorstep?
I did, actually. I found out before Christmas. I got an email from Aaron, who was responsible for contacting a number of the bloggers. Who got contacted by who seems to be a bit of a mystery. Like, it seems like there was contact on multiple fronts, but yeah, I did find out in advance. Basically, they needed, you know, delivery details, that kind of stuff, and that's when they told us, you know, we could either send it back or keep it or give it away.
Oh, wait, they told you that at the beginning before you got it, or is that something that they've told you since?
Before we got it. Well, at least in my case, I think some people didn't get a lot of notice that the laptop was coming. I think in particular, I suspect that some of the Mac bloggers, for example, didn't know the laptop was coming. But I'm not sure about that.
So some Mac bloggers, it wasn't all just Microsoft-friendly bloggers that got them?
No, I can't remember the URL off the top of my head, but there was obviously a Mac-orientated blogger who got the machine and you know, essentially ripped the config to shreds in terms of what it was.
And now, it's time for a break. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back soon.
Are you looking for a podcast that's on the cutting edge of what's new and exciting on the internet? A podcast for users about the things that matter to them? The Global Geek Podcast is this and more. A podcast about the latest technology news, reviews and interviews, applications and programs to make life easier, sites and services that are useful, fun, productive or just plain interesting. Not forgetting the Get Chicken segment. Presented by two hosts on opposite sides of the globe. We really are the Global Geek Podcast. Find us at www.globalgeekpodcast.com on the podcast network. Two hemispheres, two geeks, one podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, I've been having major technical issues with my Acer laptop tonight. It's not an Acer Ferrari, I hasten to say. It's a two-year-old, what is it? Acer TravelMate tablet PC that I bought, and it's on its last leg. So if anyone from Apple are listening, I'd really like one of them, you know, MacBook Pro things.
You want to make sure you get the Pro one, though. The other ones, well, like most Macs, quite faulty. You've been reading Scoble's blog, and his poor son saved up his whole year's worth of savings and goes out and buys a Mac, and now it reboots itself every 15 minutes.
Oh, no, I hadn't seen that, really. That's terrible.
Yeah. Apparently the poor kid's in tears.
Yeah.
That's what you get when you rock the boat and you don't buy a PC.
Yeah, you're obviously a PC user. Dunk?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I've had a look at Macs. I played with them a little bit when I was at uni many years ago, and you know, I mean, it's the difference between $1,000 laptop for a PC and $3,000 or $4,000 for a Mac. I know what I'd rather do with my $3,000: go to Queensland on a holiday, or you know, go and shout myself something nice, rather than just, you know, what's the point of us having a white thing which supposedly, you know, may or may not work during the next 6 months? It's not me.
Yeah, but you know, they look good.
Oh, yeah, but, you know, so do models and skimpy underwear, but I don't get them either, do I?
Well, maybe that's what's going wrong.
I've been reading too much Ben Barron, just ignore me.
Yeah, Ben will do that to you. He'll mess with your worldview. The big news, of course, outside of Microsoft giving away laptops in the last few days, has been the execution of Saddam Hussein. Pack of player cards, enemy number one, Axis of Evil, enemy number one, despite the fact that he really had nothing to do with 9/11 and didn't have any WMD, but he's still, you know, number one bad guy.
Yeah, he only killed a few million Kurds, massacred his own people. You know, he wasn't a bad guy.
Look, I think generally accepted that he was a bad guy. But the point is that there's lots of bad guys out there. And why has this one been, why was this one demonized over the last few years to the extent he has been? And B, why was his execution rushed? Now,
I believe on the latter one, it's got something to do with some sort of Muslim holiday, which had actually started the following day, and it was a bad omen to execute him during this holiday. So that may account for some of the speed of the execution.
They hung him the day before Eid, the big Muslim festival Eid, but that really had nothing to do with it. Let's face it, the guy had been in prison for how long?
Oh, but 12 months at least.
Yeah, it'd have to be that long. And he was the trial for genocide was about to come up. But the big issue with this is, and this is hardly getting talked about at all, as far as I can tell, in the mainstream press, either in the US or Australia. I've been kind of tracking it for the last couple of days. The day before his execution, the United Nations Humanitarians, director of the Humanitarians Group, Louise, I've got a name here somewhere, Louise Arbour, the High Commissioner for the United Nations Human Rights Committee, Louise Arbour, came out and said, look, the guy shouldn't be executed. That trial was a farce. These aren't her actual words, but she said basically this: the trial was a farce. It wasn't a fair trial. He deserves a fair trial, and that he shouldn't be executed, or they should, you know, hold off on executing him. But of course, the US didn't listen. Not that the US has really listened to the UN much in the last few years, where Iraq is concerned. They were happy to use the United Nations resolutions to build up their story to invade Iraq in the first place, even though Saddam was abiding by the resolutions. But you know, as soon as the UN said no, you can't go and invade a sovereign nation, US went, well, fuck you, UN. We'll do whatever the fuck we want. It's not just Louise Arbour, the High Commissioner for the United Nations Human Rights Commission, who came out and said this. It is also Human Rights Watch came out. Now, these are people who you would think they're not naturally inclined to be Saddam lovers. Human Rights Watch, right? These people have criticized Saddam mercilessly over 30 years. But they've come out and said that his trial for crimes against humanity was fundamentally unfair, and the guilty verdict lacks legitimacy due to procedural and substantive flaws. And they went on to say a list of things, saying that Hussein and his co-defendants were not given adequate notice of charges against them or enough time to prepare a defense. Prosecutors failed to disclose exculpatory statements and failed to disclose witness statements and other evidence in advance of trial. Chain of custody issues were dismissed without argument. Not to mention the fact that several of Hussein's defense lawyers were assassinated during the trial, and there was a turnover of judges, and
of which I believe were also assassinated.
Yeah. So it was a debacle. I mean, if you had a trial like that in the United States or Australia, it would just get shut down. Apparently all of this escaped John Howard's attention, because I read in the press today, in the Border Mail, John Howard's quoted as saying that Saddam was given a fair and proper trial. The real significance is that this man has been given a proper trial and due process was followed, Mr. Howard said. Well, not according to the United Nations and Human Rights Watch.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, I mean, could they have actually in Iraq have been a more fairer trial than what he got? I mean, it was a certain improvement on what it was when he was running the country. And, I mean, in Howard's defence, I mean, and I believe it too, as well. I mean, I'm not going to shed a tear that he was hung. I think the biggest problem with him being hung now is it was too late. It should have happened a long, long, long time ago. And he should have been the problem with the whole Iraq war this time is that George Bush's father didn't do the job properly back in 91.
Well, the big issue with the way that they rushed through the execution is that he was about to be trialed for the genocide against the Kurds. This was the big trial, and one of the theories on why the US were more than happy to hand him over to the Iraqis for the late night execution was that the US and potentially some of their allies were going to be implicated during this trial.
I can't say for sure, but that's not the case. But I think you're drawing a very long bow there. I mean, conspiracy theories abound on all these things. Should he or should not have been executed? I suppose we can go to the argument about capital punishment. The one thing I will say, and I don't know if have you seen the video of his execution?
Yeah, I have.
On YouTube,
I saw it on Google News.
One thing I did personally find disgusting is the way they treated him before they executed him, the jeering and the carry on. okay, so the guy was a tyrant, he was a mass murderer, but I think killing somebody, there has to be some sort of level of dignity, and you know, he had to take somebody's life. I think he deserved to be treated a little bit more respect than he was.
Well, yeah, I agree with you. There was a lot of jeering going on, and the guy in charge of it was actually trying to get people to shut up. But the other interesting point about that is, on the day the news broke, I was reading the press reports, and I was reading in the news, they said that he was wearing a red jumpsuit when he was hung, which is apparently a tradition that goes back pre the rule of the Ba'ath Party in Iraq. Of course, when the video comes out from the shaky little mobile phone cam, he's actually wearing a black suit, no red jumpsuit. The second thing was the press was saying he didn't utter anything, he didn't make any statements as he was when he was in the execution chamber. And of course, he had an ongoing dialogue with the guys that had him there, basically, you know, calling them cowards. And then, you know, reciting the prayer as he was executed. So I don't know where the press... Obviously, the press were getting their information from as reliable a sources as Bush, Blair and Howard were getting their evidence. The CIA was getting their stories, you know.
You could smell the spin from a mile off on that one.
Now, getting back to what I was saying before, you know, I don't... It's definitely not a quote-unquote conspiracy theory that the US was heavily involved in supporting Saddam and Iraq throughout the 80s, pretty much from 1980 when he invaded Iran up until the time he invaded Kuwait, he was...
No question, and that's a given fact. But I mean, to then draw the conclusion that somehow the US funded the gassing of the Kurds, I mean, it's one step between funding an army, another one to between... but basically what the conspiracy theory is alleging is that the US essentially paid for genocide. I mean, that's a very, very serious accusation to make.
you're kidding me, right? You think it's a big leap of faith to believe that the US is involved in the sponsorship of genocide around the world?
Yeah. on the extent which Saddam Hussein gassed the Kurds, I do. I think it's extremely long ago. I mean, there's no doubt that they've been up to no good. They've been involved in murders and whatnot. But, I mean, we're talking about mass murder, nearly on a scale of World War II, using poisonous gases against tens, hundreds of thousands of innocent people. I mean, if it is, I mean, something seriously, seriously fucked up with this war, to use the French, but... Yeah, I find it hard. I had to be. I'm not convinced that that would be the case.
So, do you think that while Saddam was gassing and killing everyone in the 80s, the US didn't know about it when Don Rumsfeld was going to Baghdad and shaking his hand in 83 and 84 on behalf of the Reagan administration?
Oh, I didn't say. What I said is I don't believe they paid for it. But I didn't believe they turned a blind eye. There's no doubt they turned a blind eye.
So if you're providing support for a regime that is committing genocide and you turn a blind eye to it, isn't that the same as being involved? Let me use an analogy. If you got a mate and he's a nutter, and you're putting money in his bank account because he can't afford to live, and he's taking that money and spending it buying illegal weapons and then walking down the main street of, where do you live again? Bunbury in Western Australia. And he's shooting people, and you know he's shooting people, but you keep giving him money. Do you or do you not have a degree of responsibility for perpetuating his acts?
You would probably have a degree of moral responsibility, but that question then becomes, is are the people he's shooting more at risk to your safety than he is? We look at history. Who were we allied to during World War II? We're in bed with the Russians. Now, Stalin killed 20 million people. We were shipping money, goods and ammunition to the Red Army, who, in between fighting the Germans, were actually killing their own people as well. So... You know, the morality is grey. It's not a good place to be in. It's a predicament that I don't think any nation state would ever want to be in. But it's a reality of history. Is you sometimes have got to pick between the less bad, if you like, of the two evils.
Well, and that's when it comes down to real politic. And I have less of an issue if Bush, Howard and Blair would come out and say, yeah, you know what, we did turn a blind eye to all of that and we did know what was going on. And yeah, we were putting money in his bank account when he was killing these people, but we were really worried about Iran at the time, and he was our best way of killing Iran without sending our own troops in. But they don't come out and say that. It's all subterfuge. It's all lies and deceit, the same way it was. Well, let me ask you this. The invasion of Iraq in 2003, do you believe that the governments of the United States, Australia, and the United Kingdom genuinely believe that Saddam had weapons of mass destruction?
I think there's a very large question mark over that. I'm not so sure about Australia and the United Kingdom, but I think the US probably did know the truth.
Well, we absolutely know the United Kingdom knows the truth because the documents have come out.
There was questions, yeah.
No, it's not. There weren't any fucking questions, mate. The documents have come out where the security advisors to Blair said, the White House wants us to doctor shit up because, there's the smoking gun documents that came out 6 months ago.
Yeah. Look, they're all as dodgy as each other at the end of the day.
So hold on, you readily accept that the US and the UK, and I believe Australia as well, knowingly falsified evidence to the public to invade Iraq, but you don't believe that they would be involved in sponsoring genocide. Do you know how many people have died as a result of US-led invasion and economic sanctions in Iraq in the last decade?
Be somewhere on the terms of millions.
Civilians, over 650,000 civilians is the current sort of estimate.
But you're looking at the figures in relation to starvation through the embargo, the stuff which was getting through from the All for Food program, and we can talk about the Australian government there because they're up to the neck in that as well, was all being channeled into the Saddam cronies and basically his armed forces. So the food and the money was there to be had. The people starved due to the actions of Saddam Hussein, not the US government.
Right.
UN had a program in place, All for Food, which basically allowed those funds to be had for selling in the oil so the food could go into the country and feed the people. Saddam was rorting that.
The UN was managing the All for Food program and where the money and the aid went. What do you think, the UN were giving it to Saddam on the other end? You think they were just blindly throwing buckets of money into Iraq and not checking where it went?
Well, yeah, we know that. We know that's true. We know, but from the AWB inquiry, we know, but it was all dodgy.
Well, the AWB stuff wasn't going through the All for Food program, mate. That was going through fucking backdoor kickbacks into trucking companies. Yeah. That's a completely different affair. Anyway, and you don't think the Australian government knew about that?
I believe they did.
Right. And we should point out to the audience, too, that what was your role in the West Australian government?
I was a spin doctor for the federal government.
Yeah. Yeah.
Bit of dodgy wheat and the genocide of 2 million Kurds is still a bloody big... Yeah, it's a big stretch of the imagination.
Well, okay, let's skip Iraq then, and let me go to Section B. As you know, on New Year's Eve, there was a whole bunch of documents that were declassified in the United States, and I've sort of been trawling through the National Security Archives and having a look at stuff, but this is something that isn't necessarily new. This just kind of ties into one of the other big news events in the last week. Obviously, James Brown passed away. Mm-hmm. Get in the hot tub! Don't make me wet! Anyway, And there's been a lot of eulogising over President Gerald Ford, who passed away over the course of the last week. What a great guy he was, how he brought the United States together after the Watergate scandal, blah-de-blah-de-blah. Now, one of the documents that was released under the Freedom of Information Act in 2001, kind of got lost after the whole 9/11 thing going on, was that in December 1975, President Ford and Henry Kissinger had a meeting with Suharto and were well aware of his invasion of East Timor, knew it was going on, said, yeah, no worries, go ahead, love. These documents were released 5 years ago. Now, again, when the US knew that this genocide was happening in East Timor, they were supporting, financially and militarily supporting Suharto in Indonesia while he was, committing genocide in Timor. What do you have to say about that?
Oh, have you read? Have you actually? You obviously don't get the West there. The West there today had a rather large lift out on the 30-year documents, which released in for the 76 documents, and how Fraser and Peacock, who was then foreign minister, basically decided to turn a blind eye to what was going on in East Timor, because it was more important to appease the Indonesians.
Of course, Australia was just as responsible for all of that. So, is that sponsorship of genocide when you're providing financial aid to a country that's committing genocide?
I don't think anyone's ever called what happened in East Timor genocide. It's the first time I've ever heard it mentioned in those terms. Certainly there was murder on a very large scale, but certainly it wasn't genocide.
So what's the difference between, you know, it's anywhere between 60 to 100,000 East Timorese killed in the first year after the violence began in 1975? What's your cutoff line for genocide?
I think technically it's about a million everyone. It'd be pedantic, but I agree with
the
you.
The population was only 600,000, so if he wiped out the entire population, that wouldn't have qualified for genocide in your book.
if we look at East Timor, I mean, they did actually fight back, whereas the Kurds just got gassed. So, I mean, if you fight back, you run that risk, I guess.
I think the Kurds were fighting back as well as they could, mate.
Yeah. All right, point taken here. Let's talk about more about these documents, really. Did you see the old thing about the old silver-haired bogey was a target from Palestinian terrorists?
This is Bob Hawke, former Australian Prime Minister, but at the time he was the head of the Union and the Labor Party in Australia.
Yeah, I mean, how different the world would be if he hadn't been elected. We'd still have that left-wing Labor Prime Minister and Malcolm Fraser in the chair, and we haven't had all those wonderful things they actually did between 83 and 96. So,
do you say left-wing Labor Prime Minister of Malcolm Fraser?
Yeah. Bob Hawke was one of the best Liberal Prime Ministers Australia's ever had.
And you're saying that Malcolm Fraser was with the Labor Party, really, secretly?
Secretly, yeah.
Bob Hawke was, Hawke and Keating, despite my reservations about the Labor Party in general, there were some really important things that Keating as Treasurer in particular did, I'd say, for Australia, you know.
In the first 5 years, before they really screwed the country up, because like most most people in the Labor Party of that era, they just couldn't balance a budget, but their first 5 years, but floating the dollar, reducing tariffs, the reform in the university sector, some of the other things they did in terms of, you know, economic change in this nation were things which really quite honestly delivered how the benefits he has now in the economy. I mean, Howard's done some good things, but all the legwork was really done by Hawke and Keating.
Oh, I think it's a bit of a long shot to say all the legwork, but there was some there were some significant things done by Keating. I mean, look at Keating. I mean, Keating has always been about as right wing as you can get in the Labor Party. I mean, he's more right wing than most of the Liberals these days. You know, he doesn't like the Queen. He's fairly much pro market forces, and he collects bloody antique clocks and Chopin collections and wears $10,000 suits, or did anyway. I don't know about this.
Well, it's no question Keating's the right of the agrarian socialists that currently run this country. No doubt about it.
Yeah. Shame the Labor Party doesn't have any talent of that ilk these days, do they?
I know Ruddy's looking pretty good. I mean, the polls are going in his favour. He speaks well. Okay, he's not the most colourful character in the world, but who never said that Harry Potter could be elected as the Prime Minister of Australia?
Mate, he's a Christian.
Yeah, and that's, I'll be honest with you, I mean, that to me worries me, the constant increase in Australia, the way we're following the United States down the path of mixing religion with the running of this nation is a very, very, very scary thing. And, you know, Rudd's already on the record as saying that God should play a serious role in Canberra. And I think that's going to scare a lot of people off in the long term. That they vote for him, he very well could get up this year. And when what's going to happen? I mean, we've got more of a Bible basher than we've got on Howard and Rudd. What do you think about that?
Oh, I'm glad you asked, Duncan.
That was a loaded question, if ever there was one.
Yeah, so over the last week, I have been getting right into a bunch of these. I've talked about this, I think, on the show in the last couple of weeks, but there's a war shaping up, basically science versus religion. And sort of the front man for it, the point man, is Richard Dawkins. He's the University of Oxford evolutionary biologist, very famous author, and very, very articulate, intelligent gentleman. He has recently come out with his latest book called The God Delusion. I think at the moment it's number 3 in the US on Amazon's bestseller, top seller list. He and another guy by the name of Sam Harris, who has written a number of books. His most recent is called A Letter to a Christian Nation, which is, I think, number 30 or something in Amazon's list at the moment. These two guys are really taking the point position on saying, you know what, it's the 21st century and there really is no space left for religion in human affairs. It's something that's a relic from the Bronze Age, and we, you know, science has tried to live side by side with religion for the last century. And, you know, it's sort of been a policy of live and let live, but it's really not working, because we're seeing, you know, the increasing rise of this militant Christian right wing, fundamentalist right wing, getting involved in politics in the US and now in countries like Australia. We're seeing, you know, the troubles that we're having with fundamentalism in other religions around the world. There are wars all over the planet being fought over fundamentalism. We have, you know, some supposedly the bastions of democracy and civilization and sophistication in the West, and now we have people suggesting that you know, intelligent design, quote unquote, should be taught side by side in science classes with evolution. It's not just wrong and scary. It's appalling that in the 21st century we still have such a large percentage of the population in the educated, well-to-do West. It's one thing for, you know, a bunch of peasants living in tents in the Middle East to still have Bronze Age mythological beliefs, but when we have well-educated and, you know, well-off middle-class people in the West believing in supernatural beings and magical prophets, then it's really scary.
Geez, if you ever had a Christian audience, I think you just got rid of it.
Well, I'm actually going to start a new segment on the show, and we're going to do it, I think, once a week. It's going to be called Convert a Christian. And my goal is to get a Christian on once a week and cure them of their Christianity, because it's just, look, I believe that you have the right to, in a democracy, to believe whatever the hell you want to believe as long as it doesn't hurt anybody else. But that doesn't mean that if I see people out there and they're suffering under damaging delusions, that I don't feel a responsibility to cure them of that for their own well-being, as well as the well-being of society.
Yeah, look, I couldn't agree more with you. I mean, I'm not anti-Christian to the point is I don't believe that people should be, you know, people are entitled to go out and believe in what they want to, but I don't want it thrust down my throat, and I don't believe that to the extent of what's happening in the United States, and it's now starting to happen to Australia, that Christianity should be that heavily involved in the running of our government, because, I mean, if you look at the history of the English-speaking peoples, and I say that because I've actually got Andrew Roberts' book of that exact title sitting on my desk here, and one of the things he talks about the rise of the English-speaking peoples over the last 100 to 150 years was that basically, because we were secular societies, whereas a lot of the other societies, we were based, you know, on Mohammedism or Catholicism, as the case would be, but that particularly amongst the Protestant English-speaking people was this sense of, you know, a secular society. And even if you go to the United States, you know, the United States, this land which carries on about God so much, the founding fathers of the United States were the most anti-Christians you'd ever want to meet. Andrew Jackson, Washington, they all hated organized Christianity. They didn't like the Protestant church. And there are words they've written which are actually against the whole following of Jesus and how stupid it can be and how it shouldn't be. And it's actually written there in the Constitution, the separation of church and state is a fundamental in the States. And yet, as we move further and further away from those founding principles, as we can see, the United States is becoming really, really, really screwed up. The fact that people like George Bush believe they have this God-given right to do as they please, to invade countries, as we've spoken about tonight. You know, but it's not driven by a sense of morality or a sense of humanity. It's driven by some belief, false as it may be, in a higher deity is telling them what to do. And I think that's scary. And as we go into the 21st century, you know, if this is the way society's going. And is it only in the last week? You know, Cam, you might remember 10 or 15 years ago, they were always talking about how churches were getting empty and the pews were empty. And I read Cardinal Pell just before Christmas in the Herald Sun in Melbourne talking about the great resurgence in Christianity in Australia and how churches are packed out as they've never been in the last 20 years. We're moving, you know, becoming more polarised society, people are getting more and more into GOG, and it's not a good sign. You know, we've seen the walls already. What's going to happen tomorrow, the next week, the next year?
It's interesting that I didn't see that quote from Pell, but I'd be interested to, I'm just Googling it now, looking up the data from the most recent Australian census and seeing if that's actually reflected. Because the last lot of stats that I saw didn't really back him up.
In Australia's still very, very good in terms of the fact that the amount of people who don't declare themselves as being religious compared to, say, the States. I think the States, it was something like 94% of them declared themselves as being Christian or something like that. And I read some statistics the other day. It said 2/3 of all Americans attend church at least once a week or something like that. It's, you know, which is nothing in comparison to what it is here. But certainly, you go to local church, and I had to go and get my son baptised because it's the only way to get him into a private school in this neck of the woods. And yeah, everyone was happy, you know, being happy, clappy, and carrying on. And then the minister started speaking in tongues, and that was, you know, I was right out the side door. But yeah, it's starting to change. We've always been 5 or 10 years behind the States, and I think you're starting in the next census and the census ahead, you're going to start seeing a change in those figures.
According to Wikipedia, I don't know how current these figures are, but it says that the breakup of Australia: Roman Catholic 26.6%, Anglican 20.7%, other Christian 20.7%. So that's 40, 50, 60, 70.
60 odd.
It's pretty much 70% of the population classified themselves as Christian, 2.1% Buddhist, 1.5% Muslim, 0.4% Jewish, 0.8% other, no religion, 15.5%. So only, you know, 15% of the population of Australia, when surveyed, classify themselves as atheist.
Yeah, but that's the census, people. I mean, you know, it's like when you were a kid at school, what religion are you? And I would put Anglican, because I was raised to be an Anglican, even though I'm not baptised.
Yeah, but that's when you're a kid at school. I mean, now you're an adult, what do you put down when the church isn't listening?
Oh, depending on whatever the mean is for that particular census year. I think one year I was a Jedi and another year I was something else. But still, in a form, you know, what religion were you originally? I was Anglican, you know. I'm not vehement in my anti-Christianity, but I don't go to church. I'm not a believer. The whole concept of what's going on scares me no end. But I think, yeah, a lot of people, maybe younger people may be different, but I mean, maybe now, good old Generation X generation, but we just put the form. I mean, I normally would. If someone would ask me to fill in a form, what religion, I'd put Anglican, but I'm really probably an atheist.
Well, you got to stop doing that, man.
mate, I don't know if I should say this, but isn't it a national sport to lie on the census? Probably just broke the law by saying that, did I?
Probably. They'll be hunting you down before you go.
Well, you know the trick that says, is any Australian listeners listening, well, probably in the same, the States. Of course, if you've ever been involved in business and politics, whatever, you'd know, but the census figures are most handy, not so much to government, but to private business, because they actually use the figures for postcode to look at the incomes for that postcode, and that's where they put the good businesses. So if you accidentally inflate your income for the year on the census and get all your friends to as well, all of a sudden you get a much better class for shopping in your local neighbourhood.
Mm. Well, you know, getting back to the Dawkins and Sam Harris stuff, you know, I wanted to actually play some clips from some of the interviews that I've listened to with those guys recently. But as you know, Duncan, my several attempts before the show to get the recording system set up so I could play those clips live, it ain't working.
You know, you lazy bastard, you think after 3 years of doing this you would have got it right, buddy?
Yeah, you would think. And, I mean, I continually have problems. I mean, I've been doing this like full time for 2 years and still can't get the recording set up to work reliably on any given night. But I blame the software. You know, I blame my tools. Anyway, so I do think we need to convert. So if there's anyone listening to the show who is a Christian, or if you know a Christian and you'd like to bring them on the show, you'd like to come on the show to be cured by Cameron, Just let me know. Jump up, send me an email, cameron@thepodcastnetwork.com, and invite yourself or recommend a friend or family member that you're worried about. And it's not a lot, but I will do what I can to cure one Christian at a time from, and I've been practicing on the people around me, and I've got a bunch of notes that I've been putting together, and I'm pulling together lots of information from lots of different sources, so I feel like I'm kind of getting ready.
And now all you need to do is a big carton of goon there. You can anoint them on the head once you've finished as well.
A carton of what?
Goon. You not heard of the term goon before? Cask wine.
No, I don't drink cask wine, Duncan.
I don't. It was very popular when I was young.
Right.
Okay. Oh. Must be a city thing.
Okay. So what else have we got to talk about tonight? I mentioned briefly when we had Mitch on the show. I'm not sure if this bit actually made it into the bit that was recorded, but there's allegedly been a bunch of anti-tank rockets stolen from the Australian Defence Forces. Well, it's a bit hard to figure out what really is going on here, but there was a report a few days ago saying that these rockets had gone missing, and I think actually New South Wales Police had... Victorian Police had a sergeant who allegedly stole weapons, including machine guns, from a military base, enough to equip a small army, was the quote that I read in the news. And then there was a bunch of allegations that there'd been a bunch of weapons stolen from Puckapunyal. For international listeners, that's sort of our big army base here in Australia. And then our defence minister, Brendan Nelson, came out relatively quickly and said that they'd done an audit and everything had been checked and accounted for. But then there were some arrests done and a rocket launcher turned, you know, the police found a rocket launcher, obviously an Australian military rocket launcher was found in some guy's house. Actually, I think New South Wales Police bought it for $50,000 on the black market. So this is, you know...
Isn't it?
So the Australian government, you know, didn't know it when AWB was pretty much, you know, providing illegal kickbacks to Saddam Hussein for a couple of years there. And, you know, then people are just walking out of our military bases apparently with rocket launchers.
Yeah, and ASIO's involved in the audit and the investigation apparently. So, I mean, if they've actually called in ASIO at this stage and not just left it to military police, something very odd's going on. Are we near a London train bombing or a 9/11 in Australia? I mean, what else do you do with rocket launchers?
And here's my problem with ASIO coming in to investigate. It's kind of like when the government gets the government to investigate if the government did anything wrong in the whole AWB scandal. I mean, you know, like, whoa, come on.
Yeah, the little different. I mean, you're talking about the spooks coming in. I think what they're suggesting, or that the involvement in ASIO would suggest, is that there has been some infiltration of the armed forces by possibly a foreign force, and that's what ASIO's job is. So, you know, I don't think necessarily the government's involved with the, you know, rocket launchers or anti-tank rockets as they were walking at the base. I think something really odd's going on. I mean, we've always been seen as a soft target. Is 2007 going to be a Bali on home soil?
Do you have any faith in ASIO?
No.
Me either. Because ASIO were pretty sure that Saddam had weapons of mass destruction and was Osama bin Laden's best mate.
I just think the Keystone Cops, unfortunately, and ASIS is the same. It's just, Australian Defence Forces do bat above their level and then their skill when they do go overseas, and the SAS in particular is world class. But at the end of the day, so someone tomorrow decided to invade Australia, we'd last 48 hours at tops. I mean, okay, slightly better than New Zealand, who doesn't even have an air force. But I mean, our defence forces, they're very, I mean, not begrudging anyone who's in them, and that they do their best for the country. But government's underfunded it for years. Now the rocket launchers, well, and we've probably only got five of them as well. You know, we've probably enough ammo to last a day. So it's probably our entire arsenal of rocket launchers has now been stolen. They're saying when we went to East Timor that one of the problems was is that essentially they're panicking because they're going to run out of bullets after they'd been there a month, because they didn't have, basically because the stocks are so low, they only had to take the source from the United States or somewhere like that. But no FAFE at all. I mean, I'm just happy I live in the country and not in Melbourne or Sydney where the likely strike's going to be.
Yeah, I seem to recall ASIO getting involved in the investigation of when Foreign Minister Alexander Downer's office was accused of leaking Andrew Wilkie's report from the Office of National Assessments on the fact that Iraq had no weapons of mass destruction pre the invasion as well. And I think themselves and the Australian Federal Police both had a look at that and, to the best of my knowledge, still haven't delivered a finding on that after 3.5 years.
They know where the money comes from.
Well, see, this is the thing, and yeah, I don't know. It's, you know, as I said to you when we had Brekkie the other day, I mean, and I said on the show before, I voted Liberal every election since I was 18, but, you know, these guys are just so fucked up now that, you know, they need a change.
Yeah, you know, on that basis too, it's a very, very deep flaw in how Australia's developed over the last 20 years. It's not just the Liberal Party; the Labor Party is the same. It's the politicisation of the civil service, if you like. Whereas in England, you have this very, very neutral civil service, where they, you know, never politically involved. They are an impartial judge of what's right and wrong. The civil service or the public service, if you like, over the last 25, 30 years, is so politicised now that you can't trust a lot what they do, and that includes as high up as ASIO and ASIS.
So if anyone out there listening to the show has in their position a rocket launcher that you've bought on eBay, maybe
50 grand pay by paper,
let us know. Come on, do a review. Like we got Mitch on to review the Acer Ferrari. We'll get you on. You can do a review of your ADF rocket launcher. Tell us what you think. Is it accurate? Do you think it was money well spent by the ADF initially, the Australian government, and the and by yourself when you bought it on eBay in the grey market? Is it, you know, is it a good buy for Christmas? If you got a rocket launcher for Christmas in your stocking?
And does it actually work?
Yeah, unlike what was it we bought a few years ago that didn't work? Submarines.
Collins class submarines.
Collins class submarines.
The planes aren't coming now on time. What else have we bought? Especially everything we've ever bought, I think, in our armed forces has been defective or has never arrived.
That money, you know, went to someone's pocket.
Yeah, well, sure, it was mine, though.
Final story for tonight. I got a big kick out of this during the week. You hear about this new satellite that Europe launched, the COROT, Convection, Rotation and Planetary Transits satellite that they launched?
I did hear a little bit of it. I only remember it because of what a bizarre name it is. I suppose at least it's roughly in English, but what is it supposed to do? Is it going off to Jupiter or somewhere like that? Or?
No, well, see, the challenge, it's actually going in search of planets that could sustain life outside of our solar system. Apparently, and I didn't know this until I read the article, we still have not ever seen another planet outside of our solar system.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
I thought we'd seen a couple just on the outside of, or they're just presuming that they're there.
Yeah, so apparently what happens is what we're able to do is look at stars and observe through a sort of a wobble in their gravitational thing, spin, if they have large gaseous bodies in orbit around them that's sort of providing, when they get in close, the gravitational force is so big that there's a slight wobble on the axis of the sun. So we were able to infer through that data that these suns have large gaseous bodies akin to our, you know, Jupiter and Venus and Saturn and these sorts of things. Venus, is that big? No. Jupiter and Uranus is the one I was thinking of.
Neptune, yeah.
No, Neptune's too small. Doesn't count. But we can't actually see them because our telescopes aren't powerful enough, and we can't actually see anything the size of the Earth. Now, the planets that can sustain what we think of, what we know as organic life, would have to be of a similar sort of size as Earth and a similar sort of distance away from the sun. Because, you know, life as we understand it, can only exist in a certain kind of temperature bracket. So if a planet is any closer to the sun than the Earth is, really, or much closer to the Earth and the sun, to the sun than the Earth is, or to a star than the Earth is, it's going to be too hot. And if it's much further away, it's going to be too cold. And so we need to go out there and try and find planets that are the size of ours. Now, we can't do that from the Earth. We need to get outside of our atmosphere so we, you know, block out a lot of the you know, the disturbances that we have in our atmosphere from being able to see objects. So this is what this satellite is doing. It's basically going out there in search of you know, sort of Earth-type planets to basically then we can focus other sort of satellites on them to track, see if there's any radio waves or signals coming out of them. You dig?
Yeah, basically. How long are they talking to this over? 100 years or something? Or
no, a week or two. You know, it's just a quick thing. I don't know. That's a good question. I know,
only because I spent far too much time on Wikipedia. I know that Voyager 1 is only in the heliosphere at the moment, which is the outer edge of the universe, and that's taken it, what, 25, 30 years to get that far, so...
I don't know it's going outside of our solar system to do this. I think it's just getting up out of our orbit. But the thing that I like most about the story is that it launched from Kazakhstan.
I know. I just keep thinking of Borat.
I know. Isn't that so great? I mean, I can just imagine the politicians in Kazakhstan going, what are we going to do? We have to do something to combat this Borat character. I know, we will launch this satellite. the other thing I liked about it is that NASA were going to launch a very similar satellite in 2008, I think, and the Europeans beat them to it. That's always good.
Well, competition with a thing with dry space. I mean, we've waited far too long for people to go to the moon. It's only that the Chinese are talking about going to the moon, but the US is talking about it now. So bring on the Europeans, bring on a lot of them. Who knows, Cam, by the time we get old, we might actually make it to the stars.
I don't intend on getting old, Duncan. I intend on extending my life through to immortality through nanotechnology, my friend.
Oh, let's hope it's a bit quicker. We're all getting a bit old, though. I mean, what do you think? 15, 20 years till immortality is an option, or?
Probably.
No, technically, one of your favourite areas.
Yeah, and I've had a couple of guests on the show talking about it. My favourite, my two favourites are Ray Kurzweil, and the other one is, God, what's his name? Cambridge biogerontologist de Grey.
Aubrey de Grey.
Thank you. How did you know that?
I don't know. I just did.
I had Aubrey de Grey on the show about a year ago. Now, Aubrey is saying he reckons within the next 25 years, I think, we'll be able to extend the average healthy human lifespan out to about 120. And then within the next 25 years, we'll be able to extend it out to 350 to 500 years.
Wow.
And, you know, from there, you know, it should just get better. That's assuming that, you know, the planet doesn't get too hot and we all die, or George Bush doesn't start World War III and we all die, or Brendan Nelson doesn't, you know, let rocket launchers get sold on eBay and we all die, and all of the various shit we could all die scenarios. So assuming that none of those things happen, and we can, you know, you can hold out till about 2030, let's say 2030, I reckon we've all got a good chance of living pretty much for as long as we want to live. Of course, the other problem is that the I did this on the show last week when we had Wisconsin Secretary of State on the show, Doug La Follette, is that we got guys like Melbourne neuroscientist Dr. John Reed saying that we're already overpopulated as a planet. There's already a billion people too many here. I think you and I were talking about this the other day, right? We've got to wipe a few billion people out, so we got that problem.
Which then becomes the moral equation: is, well, why are you sustaining life further if you can't? There's too many people here already. I mean, it's,
or why are we executing guys like Saddam Hussein who are actually doing the good thing by getting rid of people?
Ironically, yeah. But what I can say with confidence though, is that we can both have this discussion now without the our views and our moral guidance being clouded by the pale of Christianity, because it's only through scientific debate and scientific thought will mankind actually come up with an answer to this stuff, because if God gets in the way, we're all gone.
Well, that's actually one of the really good points that I think Sam Harris was making on the Point of Inquiry podcast I was listening to on the weekend. He said, you know, if you have political leaders that believe that Jesus is going to come back and take all the good people up to heaven and send all the bad people down to hell, By the way, it's about 2,000 years late, but who's counting? If your political leaders genuinely believe that, then what is their incentive to try and make good decisions to manage human progress over the next, you know, 200, 500 years, when they don't really believe that it's going to matter anyway, because Jesus is going to come? Which is one reason why, you know, I don't think we can vote for Christians anymore.
I don't know if we have much of a choice. I mean, I suppose the only other alternative is to not vote, because we're facing an election this year in Australia where we won't have a choice.
Well, it's one of the things that Sam did say on this podcast is in the United States, they've done surveys of the people there, and they explicitly have stated that they would not vote for somebody who was not who was an atheist, a declared atheist. They would much rather vote for a Muslim or a Jew, or somebody of a different religious denomination to themselves, than to vote for an atheist, according to surveys done in the US.
But would they to that extent? I mean, is it Mitt Rooney, the potential Republican candidate who's a Seventh-day Adventist, I believe, from Massachusetts, the governor of Massachusetts? And there's a lot of discussion there is, would they actually vote for somebody who is of that persuasion? I mean, you remember, I mean, the Americans have only ever had one Catholic president as well. I mean, they've always voted Protestant.
And they had him whacked.
Yeah, fix him up. He did no time at all, but, you know... I don't know. I mean, Australians would vote. Look, I could say with confidence, but Australians couldn't care less about the political, you know, the religious persuasion of their candidates. And I just hope it always stays up.
Well, I can care less now. I mean, I never did in the past, but now, moving forwards, I'm going to be making a distinct effort not to vote for anybody who expresses any sort of religious affiliation. Set of religious beliefs.
And that's fair enough. I suppose I was thinking of it more of the flip side,
sure,
is where Australians aren't looking to vote for Christians on the whole. But yeah, I mean, certainly with some of the things that are coming out, you know, you've got that, I can't remember her name, the bird in Sydney who got elected, who was from the Hillsong congregation.
Yeah, very scary stuff.
Louise.
Yeah.
Sorry, one of those Northwest suits, you know. You've got happy, clappy Christians like that getting involved in politics now. I mean, it's bad news. And look, I've always voted Liberal, and I probably won't be this time, but I don't know who I'm going to vote for, and it could just be a matter of, you know, as they say in Australia, it's not compulsory to vote. It's only compulsory to get your name ticked off at the voting station. I'll just go in there, plop the paper, and put the paper straight in the box, put nothing on it.
Well, hopefully by the next federal election, I'll have set up the Cameron Riley party, the pro-atheist party, and we'll have a crack.
Yeah, the first thing we've got to do, we've got to ban non-religious weddings.
Ban non-religious weddings?
Yep, because as far as I'm concerned, is as long as this country supports a policy where two guys and two girls can't get married, then nobody should be able to get married in the church. Because if marriage is such an important religious fundamental, it should be restricted only to religious groups.
Yep, no, I agree with you. I just think we should ban weddings, full stop.
Mate, I wish someone had told me that. Well, how long have I been married now? 8 years ago.
Oh, me too. Both times around. Oh, it's a 17th century concept. Like religion, it's well past its use by date.
You've done it twice?
Yeah.
You didn't learn the first time?
No comment.
Yeah, well, we're talking about converting Christians, mate. We need a... what are they... It's around an intervention.
An intervention. Yeah, yeah. All right, I don't want to say any more on that. I'll get myself into trouble. Duncan Riley is going to be guest hosting G'day World for the course of this week while he's batching it and I am batching it. We're in different time zones, but good to have you on, mate. Thanks for joining us. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Mate, and hopefully tomorrow will be a little less controversial.
Talk to you tomorrow. Hopefully tomorrow night the recording setup will work first time.
No worries, thanks.
Cheers, buddy.
This show was brought to you by the Podcast Network, the voice of the people.